Welcome to the podcast of America This Week, courtesy of the Catholic Channel on Sirius XM 129. If you want to listen to more of America This Week, subscribe to Sirius XM and tune in on Wednesdays at 1 p.m. Eastern to the Catholic Channel, Sirius XM 129. Now back to America This Week, live with Father Matt Malone and Kerry Weber.
Welcome back. You're listening to America This Week on the Catholic Channel, Sirius XM 129. I am Kerry Weber, along with Father Matt Malone, and we are talking with Father George Drantz. And you are welcome to join the conversation by giving us a call at 1-888-3-CATHOLIC. That's 1-888-322-8465. So Father Drantz is an actor, he's a Jesuit, and he's director of the Magis Theater Company. And the Magis Theater Company's newest production is Pedro Calderon de la Barca's Calderon's Two Dreams. So I wonder, Father Drantz, if you could tell us a little bit about these plays, which may not be familiar to folks, and then why now?
Sure. Pedro Calderon de la Barca was probably the greatest poet, dramatist of Spain. Many people hear of the Siglo de Oro, the golden age of Spanish drama, with Lope de Vega, Calderón, Tirso de Molina. Calderón was unique in that his particular playwriting was much more philosophical than the other two. He was educated by the Jesuits, and so a lot of his work is infused with themes that we find in the spiritual exercises, themes that we find in Jesuit spirituality. I was fascinated with his first play, Life is a Dream, that was written in 1635. He wrote that after being in the army, and it was a very tumultuous time in the history of Spain. And what he brings from that, Matt, you used the word surreal earlier, and surreality. It certainly was that at that time, politically, with all of the intrigues that were going on in Europe. And so his experience of coming back from the war led him to write this play, which is called The Hamlet of Spain. And the main character, Segismundo, is prophesied to be the worst tyrant that ever lived. And so his father, wanting to save the people from this, takes the baby and imprisons him in a tower, and he's raised in this tower. The question then becomes, well, what made him so fierce? Was it that he was imprisoned, or was it because of the prophecy? And it becomes a question about the role of human free will in a society that sometimes shapes us. People talk about destiny, but how much does our free will actually allow us to interact with what people might think of as fate? So it was a real triumph for the stage in that he wove these existential philosophical concepts into really compelling, beautiful poetry between these characters with real needs and real wants. I love that play, and when I was speaking to one of my professors about it, he said, well, you know, Calderon wrote a second one 40 years later. And it's at that time that I found out that Calderon, after being in the limelight, decided that he really needed something else in his life. He had just, he was kind of, as you would expect, a courtier, as and everything that comes along with that. He had a mistress. He probably had an illegitimate child. But there was a time in his life where his mistress died, his brother died. He was experiencing all this life, this loss of life. He went deeper and actually became a priest. So he wanted, fascinating. He wanted to leave writing behind, but the court pressed him to continue. And so he changed his style to write only spiritual allegories, where he would look at mythology and really reveal the spiritual underpinnings of these stories. After a while, he ran out of myths, so he said, well, why don't I do that with my own work? So he went back to his classic, the thing that put him on the map, and 40 years later, 1677 or so, he wrote what's called an auto sacramental, which is a play that is a wonderful allegory, but is meant to enlighten people about the Eucharist and about what the grace and the gift that the Eucharist is for us, performed on the Feast of Corpus Christi, very much like the cycle dramas, performed in carts, a much more popular theater than his first court theater. But again, what makes it fascinating is he doesn't lose any of the high poetry or the philosophy, but through fascinating use of image and embodying these ideas, he makes it accessible to a very popular audience. What we're excited about is we have, I think, the first production where we'll be performing both of these plays on the same night. So we're boiling them down because some of the speeches are quite long. And we realize that a contemporary audience probably doesn't have the attention span that they had in 17th century Spain. So we're looking for the essence of it, and I think we've done a great job with the script, and we really look forward to allowing people for the first time to see these two pieces in dialogue with each other, not only to reveal some of the relationships and the philosophical principles, but also to see that in the lifespan of one artist, how someone can view the world at age 35 in a very, very worldly context, and then how that same person, 40 years later, after living and after experiencing great, great richness and great loss, how does that person's view of what is important change? In many cases, he repeats the same words verbatim, but the context is completely shifted. And for theater geeks like myself, it's a real treat to be able to see that and to be able to play with that with a company of actors that's been exploring the text for a long time has been a real delight.
And these plays are being produced by Majus Theater Company.
Yes.
So could you tell our listeners a bit about the company and how you came to become involved with it?
Sure. Well, I did my graduate studies at Columbia University, and there were some of us who, after we left the program, we were in the New York theater scene, and we realized that the kind of education that we had was really much more European than it was American. There were a lot of different influences, but a lot of it goes back to late Stanislavski, Jerzy Grotowski, some of these big theater people who don't mean much to anyone right. anymore. but to us, it's kind of the core of what excited us about physical action, about embodying words, about really getting the most out of a text. So I was at a party with some friends, and we said, boy, I wish there were a place where you could go and take a class in this the same way you would for a dance class or a scene study class. And I said, well, why don't we start one? And so we started the company just by getting together and training with each other once a week. We had a barter agreement with Notre Dame School of Manhattan, and graciously that still continues, where we help out with the drama program and they allow us to rehearse there. So it's a wonderful way of building a broader community. And we like to see ourselves as a home for actors who really want to get more out of their craft, who really want to get more of an integrated view of their craft with their life. That's kind of what Magus is about. And the Latin word for more, of course, in the spiritual context, it's what more can I do for God? Personally, that's the way I see it. And I think for our actors, this idea of more, of the spirit, has become very important for our company. One of the first works that we did was C.S. Lewis's Great Divorce. And Neil Genslinger graciously, in his review in the New York Times, said that it's so rare to find a piece of theater that actually talks about the spirit anymore. It's kind of ho-hum and passé and maybe a little quaint for the contemporary theater goer. But to embody questions of the spirit in a vibrant, vital, and hopefully delightful way is really something that we strive for.
And there's a natural creative relationship between the theater and the Catholic imagination. I mean, because there's this, well, as we see in this playwright, it's a theme that runs throughout Spanish literature. We see it in Cervantes, this question of what is real, and what is not real, right? And of course, this is, you know, for the Catholic imagination, this is also an urgent question, right? Because we have a sacramental imagination, and we believe in a real presence and so forth, and acting is in itself inhabiting a reality, right, that speaks to us in the present.
That's spot on. And there are so many things that are involved in the practice of bringing words to life as an actor that really mirror a spiritual practice. One of the things that we establish as a company is ways of working with each other that is something that we do. And that's kind of the greatest secret about any practice, is that you actually do it. So we want to create an environment where that can happen, and a supportive environment where actors who are interested in making the commitment to that kind of practice can do that with each other. So what I find is that the practice of observation, the practice of really thinking deeply and allowing something to sink into your heart, really is a very spiritual practice. And very much in the way that Ignatius talks about using the imagination to enter into a scene, first to compose the place and then to place yourself and interact with it. There are a lot of people who say that that Konstantin Stanislavski got his method, the method of acting using the passive and active imagination, from the spiritual exercises.
Oh, really? Is that true?
Yeah. Dan Berrigan said that to Liam Neeson when they were on the set of The Mission. I don't know if Dan was doing one of his Dan spinning of a yarn.
Creative retrieval.
Right. But certainly it's an insight that is, if at least essentially true, if it's not historically true, that these two things are so very, very intimately connected and about the same thing.
And how does this approach of your company sort of play in the larger theater community? Do you find people sort of who are sort of receptive and interested in your approach, or do people tend to write it off as like, oh, this is a little different?
You know, it's funny. People talk about the New York theater community, where I think they should talk about the New York theater communities, plural,
right. Yeah.
Because there are so many. There's La Mama, where we do most of our work, is considered downtown theater. And then there are all of these different kind of pods or areas of interest, much like you would see in a musical scene, like a classical listener is different than a jazz listener, different to an indie rock listener. The theater communities are kind of like that as well. One thing that I would say is a lot of times people don't know what to make of us. And I think that's a great...
That's kind of nice, right?
It really is. Right. And it's fun to kind of straddle categories, because that means that we're building bridges.
Right.
And that's what I think great art does, and hopefully that's what spirituality does, is really build bridges and allow people to see possibilities where they previously did
right.
not.
And challenging people.
Absolutely.
Yeah, that makes a lot of sense.
Mm-hmm.
And so how can folks get tickets, see the show?
Great. You can log on to lamama.org. That's lamama.org.
Okay.
And we're in the upcoming section, but also if you click on the tickets, that'll take you right to Ovation Tix. There's also information on our own website, which is magistheater.org. And they can
R-E
find...
or E-R?
R-E. Very okay. good. Very good. Yes. Yes. So they can find out about it that way. We run from February 10th to the 26th, and there are 12 performances, 12 chances to see Calderon's Two Dreams.
Fantastic. Well, Father George Drantz, thanks so much for being with us.
Thank you.
Break a leg, and Merry Christmas.
Merry Christmas to you.
Okay. When we come back, we'll be speaking with our national correspondent from America, Mike O'Loughlin, about the top stories of 2016. You're listening to America This Week on the Catholic Channel, Sirius XM 129.
Number 5.
Pope Francis has allowed the Spanish Monsignor who leaked confidential Holy See documents to leave prison and return to his home diocese in Spain. The Vatican made the announcement yesterday, saying the Pope granted Monsignor Lucio Vallejo Balda clemency through the benefit of conditional freedom Although he's not extinguished his prison sentence, the 55-year-old was sentenced last July to 18 months in prison by a Vatican court for his role in leaking Vatican financial documents and reports to two Italian journalists who published two books based on the information.
Number four.
Pope Francis has spoken with Russian President Vladimir Putin about Christian persecution and the importance of interfaith dialogue. The phone call from Putin came on the Pope's 80th birthday on Saturday. The Pope also received well wishes from President Obama, Pope Benedict XVI, as well as over 70,000 emails from people around the world. The Pope chose a low-key celebration on Saturday, beginning his day by sharing breakfast with eight homeless people before celebrating Mass with cardinals. He also met with Malta's president and held an audience with members of the Nomadelphia community, a secular group whose lifestyle emulates early Christians.
Number three.
President Obama has signed the Frank Wolf International Religious Freedom Act after it was approved by the House on December 13th. The new law gives the Obama administration and the U.S. State Department new resources and training to counter extremism and combat persecution of religious minorities around the world. In particular, it aims to improve U.S. religious freedom diplomacy, train diplomats to counter extremism, address anti-Semitism, and mitigate sectarian conflict. Meanwhile, the German Bishops' Conference has called for a day of prayer for harassed and persecuted Christians for December 26th. It comes after the attack on Monday at a Christmas market that killed 12 people. The bishops chose the day to coincide with the Feast of St. Stephen, the first Christian martyr.
Number two.
Pope Francis met with the current and former presidents of Colombia at the Vatican on Friday. President Juan Manuel Santos and former President Alvaro Uribe met individually and together with Pope Francis. Both men are leading figures at opposite sides of a controversial peace agreement in the country that ends more than 50 years of civil war between government forces and FARC rebels. During the 25-minute meeting, the Pope spoke about the culture of encounter and emphasized the importance of sincere dialogue between all members of Colombian society.
Number one.
The president of the U.S. Conference of Catholic Bishops has called on Catholics to reflect on how to give of themselves in the new year. In his Christmas message, Cardinal Daniel DiNardo gave particular attention to immigrants and refugees, saying the Catholic Church in the U.S. is with them and working for them. It comes as the Catholic bishops announce they're establishing a working group to develop spiritual, pastoral and policy advocacy support for immigrants and refugees. In announcing the working group, the Public Affairs Office said the bishops will be ready to respond to any executive orders and legislation that the new Congress and President-elect Donald Trump may introduce. It will also spearhead advocacy and engage constructively with the new administration. Archbishop Jose Gomez of Los Angeles will chair the group.
Thank you for listening to the podcast of America This Week, courtesy of the Catholic Channel on SiriusXM 129. If you want to hear the full show every week, subscribe to SiriusXM and tune in on Wednesdays at 1 p.m. Eastern to the Catholic Channel, SiriusXM 129.